Hey Scott, before tonight, no one had ever had 24 assists and 21 rebounds in a game in NBA history. What can you say about the way Russell Westbrook played tonight?
I used to always say he's going to probably go down as the third best point guard ever, but I think he's past one and he's going to go down as probably the second best. One is obviously Magic. There's nobody in the history of the game that can do what he does throughout the stat sheet.
We should all have a friend like Scott Brooks, the head coach of the Surging Wizards, a friend who's willing to gas us up, like he gasses up Russell Westbrook. Washington superstar point guard is now just four triple-doubles away from breaking Oscar Robertson's career record of 181, with a shocking playoff berth now on the horizon. But to truly quantify Westbrook's greatness is to court controversy, because there may not be a better player whose weaknesses are more obvious in the modern NBA. So today, we aim to resolve the Russell Westbrook paradox, a problem that might say as much about us as it does him. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Wednesday, May 5th. This is ESPN Daily. Kirk Goldsberry, it is good to have you back on the pod.
It's great to be here, Pablo. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I'm contemplating all of the accomplishments that Russell Westbrook has had in his career. And I'm realizing, Kirk, that even more than like possibly breaking Oscar Robertson's all-time triple-double record, more than all-NBA teams and the MVP award, the most impressive thing is probably him making us care and talk about the Washington Wizards in May.
It's true. The Washington Wizards are relevant.
Kirk Goldsberry is a best-selling author, professor at the University of Texas, and former vice president of strategic research for the San Antonio Spurs. His latest piece on ESPN.com examines the NBA's most polarizing player.
There's two ways that I watch Russell Westbrook. The first way, Pablo, is analytically. I get paid, as you mentioned, to cover the league analytically, and he's very frustrating if you study stats. He's obviously one of the most talented, most athletic, and most gifted players in the league, but analytically, he's been very inefficient, particularly as a shooter on the offensive end, and he's maddening.
Beal to Westbrook for three. It's short. Russell Westbrook, 1 of 5 to open this game. Does have 3 rebounds.
The second way is a little bit more enjoyable. He's one of the most fun players to watch because he's so darn athletic. He is so ferocious. He has one of the top personalities in pro sports, and he jumps off the screen at you.
Westbrook, the hesitation. Oh, the monster jam by Russell Westbrook and the foul.
I know it's not Sunday, JK, but somebody just got baptized.
If you ever have the opportunity to watch him in person, you know what I'm talking about. He's this incredible force of nature, larger than life guy. And I think those two things, the juxtaposition between that aesthetic takeaway of watching him and then sort of the analytical way of watching him, makes what I would sort of call the Westbrook paradox, which is this guy is really complex. On the one hand, he's just simply great to watch. On the other hand, he's really frustrating analytically.
I want to explain and understand this paradox because I feel like the most simple caveman way of reframing the paradox is as a question. Like, is Russell Westbrook actually that good? And your answer to that question, Kirk, would be what?
If Russell Westbrook isn't good, then basketball is broken. That's my answer. Because if you watch him, if you build a professional basketball apparatus and this guy isn't good, you have a broken apparatus. But yeah, like in the analytic age, Pablo, there are people who dismiss Westbrook. So I think as we get more and more sort of into this analytical dogma of the current NBA, Westbrook becomes a polarizing figure.
I feel, Kirk, like you are both priest and heretic of the dogma that you are describing. Like, you are responsible for making maps, heat maps of the NBA floor, in which we can sort of visualize and understand, here is how this player is comfortable and efficient. And just for the sake of being the devil's advocate of sorts here, Kirk, to further extend the religious metaphors here, if you were to describe one of your maps of the NBA floor for Russell Westbrook, what does that look like?
Well, red is good and blue is bad on my shot charts. Blue is below average shooting performance by location. And Russell's chart is very, very blue, Pavel.
Wizards blue. He's Wizards blue, Kirk.
He paints the court a shade of Wizards blue with his jump shot activity, meaning that almost everywhere outside of the paint, he's a below average shooter. He shoots 31% from three-point range, a bit better than that in the mid-range, but still way below league average. In a nutshell, he combines volume and inefficiency in ways that would make his old general manager, Daryl Morey, lose his mind. He seems to have the stubborn insistence on taking his jump shot despite not being able to make the jump shot, to sort of paraphrase Seinfeld. You can take the jump shot, but can you make the jump shot? And the answer for Westbrook is frustratingly not really.
But in Seinfeld parlance, Kirk, I also don't want to just yada yada over what Westbrook did on Monday night against the Pacers, because it was insane. I mean, he was extraordinarily, atypically restrained from the field. He attempted only 8 shots, making 5 of them, and he didn't even attempt a three-pointer all game. And afterwards, Westbrook declared that he doesn't even think about his stat lines.
I don't think about it. I actually just go out and have fun and hoop, you know, and at the end of the day, when my journey is done and I'm done playing basketball, I can look back and think about some of the crazy stat lines, the good, the bad, the ugly.
So let's just talk about some of the bad and the ugly here for a second, Kirk, because as you've said, Westbrook has historically been a super inefficient volume shooter. And why is that, do you think? Is it just stubbornness?
Stubbornness is a good way to say it. I think he's a very proud player. He's very cocky when he gets going. And I think Russell Westbrook is not a person who really wants to be told how to play the game of basketball. And, you know, I think he deserves that right. He's one of the most complete players in the league with one exception. It just happens that one exception, shooting, has become so disproportionately important in today's NBA that it sticks out like a sore thumb. And that's an understatement. And when you look at just jump shooters, you know, player tracking system lets us group in threes and mid-range. He's the most inefficient volume jump shooter in the league. Talk about stubbornness. This guy takes about as many jumpers as anybody in the league. He's in the top 15, but his efficiency among like the top 60 jump shooters in the league is the lowest. So he takes a lot of these jumpers despite a low return on those investments.
So we've identified the biggest downside to Westbrook's game, Kirk, but what about the good? What would you say is his biggest strength?
He's one of the best shot creators in the NBA right now.
Westbrook zips it to Beal underneath. Great look by Westbrook as Beal.
Let me give you 2 stats. Per the official NBA count, since April 7th, Pablo, his assists are leading to 31.6 points per game for the Washington Wizards. That's by far the highest such mark in the league. So he's creating a huge volume of points via his passes. Now, the second thing we look at analytically is the efficiency of the shots he creates. Washington's offense has struggled most of the year because of shooting efficiency. Their effective field goal percentage of 53 ranks 21st in the league. Not great, but off of Westbrook passes, that balloons to 57.8. And the beneficiaries of those passes, guys like Bradley Beal and Rui Hachimura, are benefiting because he's creating clean, quality looks that make them and their numbers and the team's numbers benefit.
Westbrook, the lob, Gafford, the dunk, and there is a franchise-tying 24th assist by Russell Westbrook.
So any analytical sort of criticism of Russell Westbrook needs to account for this fact that he creates a bunch of great, efficient offense for his team.
And that's something that is sort of a product of this deeper understanding of analytics and the game that we have now, right? Because the notion of being able to track, oh, these assists are not all created equal, that does seem like something that wasn't always obvious to people who followed basketball.
No, you're exactly right. And these passing numbers that have evolved over the last 10 years have really helped us understand that and further helped us understand, say, the greatness of LeBron James, who's one of the great three-point assisters. So is Ben Simmons in Philadelphia. He doesn't shoot threes himself, but he often is near the top of the NBA leaderboard in creating good-looking threes for his teammates. And so, yeah, you can't really evaluate a player, especially a playmaker, in the league right now without looking at, oh, well, what is he doing for his teammates? And if it's true that the best point guards in the NBA do, in fact, make their teammates better, then Russell Westbrook checks that box very well right now in Washington.
You mentioned Ben Simmons, Kirk, and I feel like I am spiritually obligated to discuss him whenever he's brought up on this show. And it seems telling that so much of the sport demands that that guy shoot threes. But the reality of Ben is that he's not good at shooting threes. He's also like 7 feet tall, and therefore he's made a decision to not do that. Westbrook almost seems like the inverse. He seems like Ben Simmons pulled inside out, where he is 6'3". And because of that reason, maybe he feels compelled to prove that he can do the thing that guards should do, even though it's to the detriment of Russell Westbrook himself, let alone his team.
Yeah, and in the piece, I look at both Ben Simmons and Giannis Antetokounmpo, both two on-ball players in the NBA. They're obviously much bigger than Westbrook, but Westbrook's a pretty good rim attacker too. And both of these guys have really restrained their jump shooting activity. And that's an understatement in the case of Ben Simmons. So I think it is fair to say, like, there is a path for Westbrook to be a really productive player in that Simmons mold. I'm not going to shoot threes unless I really have to, and I'm barely going to shoot outside the paint. I'll leave that to my teammates. We've seen from other on-ball playmakers that that's a possible path forward. And for those of us who love Westbrook, it's a path forward we might suggest to him.
So it does seem like there is a difference, Kirk, as we decide how good Russell Westbrook truly is. It does feel like there is a difference between Russell Westbrook and the experience of him if you are a fan of the game and you have no stake, and if you are somebody who is running the team that Russell Westbrook plays for. Like, for some reason, fans cannot divorce their own personal enjoyment from the hypothetical of, well, what if I was a GM here? How do I feel about this guy?
If you go back to Michael Jordan, I think one of the many reasons he was so iconic is he was able to align being the best entertainer in the NBA in terms of the aesthetic magnificence he would bring to your arena with being the most dominant statistical player in the NBA as well, the best scorer, one of the best defenders. And so I think it's very convenient to have a great player who's both super fun to watch and super dominating. Russell Westbrook is definitely super fun to watch, but the way the game has gone, his analytical shortcomings are such a part of his portfolio, therefore he's not good. But man, isn't he fun to watch? Cormac McCarthy, who's a great writer, doesn't know how to use punctuation, and we give him a free pass, you know? Everybody gives him all the awards. You know, Russell Westbrook, he's a phenomenal basketball player by any measure. Have we lost our minds a little bit when we lose sight of that?
All right, Kirk, after the break, I want to figure out what this triple doubles record might actually mean and whether there is, in fact, a country for old men like Russell Westbrook.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo, another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
It's So, Kirk, we mentioned earlier that Russell Westbrook is unapologetic on the court, and I would be remiss if I didn't say that he brings pretty much that same exact energy to us gas bags in the media as we saw last week when Westbrook described what it's like to be on the brink of shattering Oscar Robertson's career triple-double record.
I honestly believe there is no player like myself, and if people want to take it for granted, sorry for them. But I'm pretty sure if everybody could do it, they'll do it. Honestly, Cass, I don't care what nobody thinks about it. I don't care if somebody thinks it is, you know, whatever they want to call it, stat padding or not useful. I mean, you know, I think it's very interesting that it's not useful now that I'm doing it.
So the one part of that I quibble with is whether he cares or not, what we think about it. I feel like he probably cares more than he wants to admit. But when you listen to Russell Westbrook monologue like that, Kirk, what do you think?
I think that he thinks you and I are like those two old guys from the Muppets, those two critics who just...
Yes, Statler and Waldorf. Yes.
Of course you know their names. Statler and Waldorf. And he's kind of right, because we can't do what he can do. And
no.
It's probably really annoying to be 13 years into a remarkable NBA career by any standard and just hear shade and shade and shade everywhere you go. Look at his ability to rebound and pass and score the ball. Look at his all-star resume. And he hears this criticism for years everywhere he goes. And I can't blame him for being sick of it. The triple-double is an incredible stat. It goes back into the 20th century of basketball and enables us to compare the most complete players in NBA history. When you hear the name Oscar Robertson or Magic Johnson or Jason Kidd or LeBron James, the other people near the top of this historical triple-double list, you're like, oh my gosh, these are the greatest, some of the greatest players of all time. And Westbrook's right there, and he deserves to be lauded for that. But triple-doubles are also another thing. They're meaningless.
Yes.
At the end of the day, they don't hand you the Larry O'Brien trophy because you got a triple-double. You have to win these games in the playoffs.
But my other favorite thing about the triple-double as a stat, which obviously does do a great job, as you say, of sorting some of the best all-around players in the game, the list and the names on it, no one is on that list if they're not extraordinary. But at the same time, Kirk, as someone who appreciates stats and analytics, like the idea of the triple-double as a quote-unquote stat, I mean, to me, it's always kind of struck me as like the $5 footlong of statistics. Like it only exists because it's kind of a clever, whimsical name that kind of has this rhyming notion, triple-double. Like, yeah, you get to 10, you get to be part of the triple-double. It just seems so arbitrary to me, even if it simultaneously is obviously something that only great players at this rate can do.
Me too. I think you said it well. It has a really good branding. It has a memorable name. It is an impressive thing. You got 10 points, 10 rebounds, and 10 assists, or in some cases, 10 block shots.
What's wrong with 9?
And that's been, I believe that's Daryl Morey's question too, is what if we had a different sort of binary system or a different base number in our...
Yes, if we were not on a base 10, my God, Russell Westbrook wants to stuff both of us into the same locker room.
I know, I don't want to say this. Cut this out, producers.
But no, we have to keep this in because it's too real. It's too real for podcasting, baby. But the base 10 system is tyrannical, Kirk Goldsberry. You know it, I know it. Deep down, Russell Westbrook also knows that base 10 is the only reason why this statistic is so unbelievably well known.
Double digits is a big deal, or is it? My column. So, but yeah, it's an artifact. It's arcane, but so is sports discourse in a nutshell. Because basketball analytics were so primitive for a vast majority of NBA history, we just had these convenient, countable things like points, rebounds, assists. That's how we compared. We now know that that wasn't always smart, but that's all we got when we want to go back and compare somebody like Russell Westbrook to Oscar Robertson. These basic countable stats that are flawed, and our base 10 system is all we got. So here we are.
So what should be valued as much as the triple-double, if not more so, Kirk? Because the triple-double right now, like I believe 10 seasons ago, at this point, there were like 18 of them across the entire NBA in total. Now we're at 100 plus, and certainly Russell Westbrook has like a third of those, which is wild. But what should we be fetishizing at this point, if not this nice round number rhyming sounding stat?
Yeah, it's a great question. And we're kind of already doing it, at least in the nerd community. And the word efficiency has crept into the discourse for a reason in NBA basketball. The best players in the world, Steph Curry, LeBron James, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Nikola Jokic, they're able to score and get a lot of those countable stats that make up the triple doubles, but they're able to do it at very efficient rates. They make a huge chunk of their field goal attempts, and their offenses that they're a part of are among the most efficient scoring offenses in the league. So we've replaced, I think, the triple-double with the quest for efficiency in pro basketball.
But the triple-double, Kirk, let's be honest here, like the PR department that stat has, like efficiency, quote-unquote, I hate that term as like a term that seems in any way like cool or fun to root for or encourage. We got to have like some PR consultancy improve efficiency as a term.
We need to come up with a new sort of stat or a pairing of stats or a grouping of stats like the triple double that actually accounts for the things we know matter, like 3-point percentage or shooting efficiency or defensive performance. What a concept.
Right.
Because it is nice to have the triple-double there. It's a very familiar, nicely branded stat that says something that we understand about a player's overall performance in a game. And if we had one of those that really sort of correlated with team performance and individual success as well, that would be great.
Where is the Don Draper of the Sloan Sports Analytics Conference? How has there not been someone whose job is specifically what you just described?
Dude, these people, and I'm one of them, they come up with VORP and WARP and all these terrible sounding. They sound like goblins in like the Zelda video game or something.
Box plus minus. Like, what even is that? I don't even know. We're all trapped in Daryl Morey's version of Link to the Past. So, Kirk, I did want to bring in another voice because I can hear Russell Westbrook just resenting all of the things we've been saying. And that voice I want to play for you is Oscar Robertson, because he went on Peter Vesey's podcast, the Hoop Du Jour podcast, and he got asked if he thinks Russell Westbrook will pass the triple-double mark that he had set. And this is what he said.
Well, I mean, I think he will, and I've been glad when he does, because I think he's a tremendous basketball player, an athlete. It's really something that sports writers are sort of getting known and saying he didn't do this, he didn't win the championship, and the kids, all they know is playing MVP basketball every night.
So that, again, was Oscar Robertson, NBA Hall of Famer, all-time great, weighing in on the question that we've been vexing ourselves with, Kirk, for this podcast and now a decade plus of NBA history. Is Russell Westbrook actually that good?
The answer is simple. He is great. Russell Westbrook is great. And despite the fact that contemporary NBA fans really just obsess over two things, efficiency and rings, Russell Westbrook reminds us that true greatness is something that just captures your attention and your imagination when you're in an event or watching an event on TV. And he's done that for over a decade. And Pablo, in my mind, that's athletic greatness. That, to me, is really his legacy.
Kirk Goldsberry from inside of this locker that we have both already been stuffed inside of. Thank you for joining us, as always, on ESPN Daily.
Thank you very much, Pablo.
Up next, one of the biggest sports leagues in the world shut down yesterday. And odds are you did not hear about it. So we explain what it means for millions and millions of fans.
Delicious, meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are wonderful pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Here's another story I want you to know. The past few months have felt like a slow but steady return to the familiar, with fans turning out for the NFL draft in Cleveland, and seats filling up in ballparks across America, and fewer postponements, thankfully, across all sports because of COVID. But so much of the rest of the world is not so lucky.
All right, so the big breaking story on NDTV at the moment, Rika Roy there confirming to us that all matches of the IPL have been suspended.
The Indian Premier League is the most popular cricket league on the planet. And yesterday, the IPL announced that it was stopping its season as the coronavirus continues to overwhelm a nation of more than 1.3 billion people. Now, I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I know everything about cricket, but I do know that this league is a colossal deal. Cricket is considered the second most popular sport on Earth, behind only soccer. And while its roots lie in England, the game grew globally, across the British colonies, from Jamaica to Australia to South Africa to India, where the IPL has grown, according to Forbes, into the sixth most valuable sports league in the entire world. The league is young, founded just in 2008, and it plays young. The IPL pioneered a shorter, more TV-friendly version of cricket known as 2020, where matches typically last 3 hours instead of days. You add in flashy promos and cheerleaders, and it all feels a lot more like televised sports here in America. In fact, the best players from all over the world, including England, now seek their fortunes in India because of the IPL. But this week, after a number of players tested positive for the virus, and the pandemic continued to rage just outside the cricket grounds, the IPL relented, grinding to a halt, ultimately postponing this season indefinitely. Just the latest parallel to modern American sports. Yesterday, India reported more than 350,000 COVID-19 infections and more than 3,400 deaths, with most observers believing that the real numbers are actually far higher. The country is in the middle of a humanitarian crisis that is overpowering hospitals and flooding burial grounds and reminding all of us here in America how lucky we have it right now. I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.